So the devotional process, then the most important aspects are hearing and chanting. Out of the 9 processes of hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord, deity worship, offering prayers, rendering service, becoming the Lord's friend, and surrendering everything, then the most essential is hearing and chanting. Because all these other aspects depend upon this hearing and chanting. It means that you're going to worship the deities, there must be, you're going to chant, you're going to hear, you're going to offer prayers, that's going to be based on hearing and chanting. So whatever one will do, this becomes the essential element. So it's because kirtan, the glorification of the Lord, and hearing about this glorification, is the main pastime that we see that goes on here and in the spiritual realm. So then, to chant, then we must hear. From hearing, then you get chanting. When you know something, then you can chant it. So this brings up the point that then it becomes very important to study. So Srila Prabhupada has given us so many books. And these books that are meant to be read and studied. Because by them, then we can understand who we are, what is our duties, who is Krishna, what is this material world, how we're supposed to interact or relate with the Lord and each other. So when we hear and we study, from the Acharya, then we actually get to know what is going on. Then from that, then we can repeat this to others. Then we can speak to others, we can preach, we can do so many things. And in preaching, then most essential element is to be able to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. That we can speak nicely about Krishna. We've learned from the books. We can speak so many things. But the problem is we speak something, and then afterwards the person may forget. So then how do they refer to or remember? So if they have a book from Srila Prabhupada, a book, some books, then they can always refer back to these books. Because then whatever they read, then we'll have that potency. So our preaching is basically to get them to understand and accept the process, or at least get a start in that direction. But then we see that the study of Srila Prabhupada's books then becomes most essential. So then along with those books, then that hearing and chanting from reading, studying those books, along with the association of devotees, then becomes very powerful. In devotional service, there's 5 main aspects of service that are most powerful. So, chanting Hare Krishna is the first, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is the second, then associating with devotees, and in that association, hearing and chanting about Krishna as the third. The fourth is worshipping the deity. Then the fifth is then living in the holy Nam. So that means that we make our house into a temple, or we come to the temple and we associate, or we visit the holy places like Vrindavan and Mayapur and spend time there to get in that association. So these are most essential. So we see that in the association of devotees, hearing, chanting, studying, this becomes very powerful for advancing the Krishna consciousness. There's nothing more powerful really than these processes. Therefore, they are considered the most essential. So when we are serious about this, then we can help others also become serious. That's the first thing, is that we should see and study and be convinced ourselves. Then we try to help others understand. And by that process, we ourselves become more convinced. Is that if you hear something, you absorb something. If you read, you absorb more. And if you teach, you absorb even more than that. So this process of of studying and teaching. It becomes actually very important for everyone. What you know, you speak, then you will find that what you have spoken becomes more fixed in the consciousness. More fixed. So then this will give benefit, great benefit for others in this process. So since time is not that long, and there must be many questions, either on this or any topic that we have from your reading or, you know, your contemplation, if you would like to ask, then we can carry on with that for the oral conversation we have. So does anyone have some questions?
I have a couple of questions in my mind. You were speaking that of the five most powerful processes of devotional service, one of them, the fifth one, is to live or reside in the holy home. And you mentioned that could be your house that you made into a temple, or a temple, or living in the town itself, or at work without. So my questions are, first, how is it that the holy dham, like Mayapur or Vrindavan, can be said, can be spoken of in the same breath or on a similar level as someone's home in Bombay or New York or Hong Kong or anywhere that they've made into a temple, or this kind of temple or other temple anywhere in the world? So that's question number one. And question number two is that if we can consider perhaps that residing in a holy place in a dham, or making a home into a dham, would be on similar levels or perhaps equivalent levels, if we wait to hear from you. Perhaps reading Srila Prabhupada's books, while reading or absorbed in Prabhupada's books, could be, wherever we are, could we be considered to be residing in a holy dham?
See, so wherever Krishna is, then his associates, his paraphernalia, everything's there. So that means where the deity is, then naturally then that's where Krishna, where is, will be this holy dham. Now, so in this way it's non-different. And then wherever we are, if we're reading these books, we're absorbed in chanting, we're absorbed in thinking, then we're also in the spiritual consciousness or spiritual association. So in that way, it's also the same. Same time, there is a uniqueness to the holy dham, because in the house, you know, when we're worshipping nicely or not, or just the house itself, or that part of the house that is dedicated for this process, then that becomes spiritualized. But other places may not. You step out of your house, you're in Bombay, you're not in the dham, you know, like that. Or you're like this. So, but when we're in the holy dham, then wherever we are, it's spiritual. Whether we're spiritual or not, the place is spiritual. So then, so there is a uniqueness or a specialness to the dham where it actually is.
If I understand correctly, then the dham is unique because everywhere you go in the dham, it's all pervading. Krishna's all pervading. Spiritual presence is there in a very high intensity. Whereas here in Bombay, we have this similar intensity here in the temple. But once we walk out onto the beach or wherever we might be going, Krishna is there, but more isn't. External energy.
So that's the specialness of the dham, is whatever kinds are not, wherever you are, it's actually spiritual. So therefore one has to be more careful in the dham, because one is always in the spiritual realm. The same time as if we're not, you know, as long as we're not, you know, committing some offense, then we're purified, even though we may not be really conscious of what's happening. So it's a very special place in the dham. At the same time as in our, wherever we may be, if we're practicing Krishna consciousness, that also becomes as good as the dham. But still, you know, there's, within spiritual, there's still gradations.
Okay. Maharaj, you've lived in Mayapur now for many years. Can you speak a little bit regarding the gradations of Mayapur Dham versus Vrindavan Dham in regards to its Audharya aspect? How that Audharya aspect, does that relate also to external dhams like embassies or like temples and homes? How that applies?
Means Vrindavan and Mayapur are the same place. It's just the same persons are doing the same pastimes, basically. But the mood is different. It means Radha and Krishna are, you know, together in Vrindavan performing the pastimes. And in Mayapur, then the mood is that Krishna has taken the mood of his devotees to understand what taste the devotees get for serving him. And so that mood then is pervading in Mayapur. So in Vrindavan, Krishna will be the Lord. But in Mayapur, Krishna is a devotee. So by the grace of Krishna, then we can become, you know, uplifted from the material existence. He is Mukunda. But he will give with us point to our surrender. So as we surrender to Krishna, Krishna reciprocates. But the devotees, whether we surrender or not, they try to, you know, inspire us in Krishna consciousness. So this is the difference in the mood. Otherwise, then Krishna, because he's taken the mood of his devotee, and therefore then that preaching is going on, that kindness is there, that mercy is there. So that is the specialness of Mayapur. So if in pursuance of, but still, when we approach Vrindavan, we're approaching it through Lord Chaitanya. Because by Lord Chaitanya's grace, then we can actually gain Krishna and Radharani's favor. Because Radha and Krishna, they're approached with love. But since we are not having that kind of love, we're, you know, practicing devotees, we're trying to develop that love. But Lord Chaitanya will appreciate that. So, because he is Radha and Krishna, then we are getting the favor of Radha and Krishna, even though we don't have the qualifications actually to worship Radha and Krishna. So then, with that, then we can approach Radha and Krishna. So to worship Radha and Krishna in the Dham, then becomes, in my opinion, special, because then by the grace of Lord Chaitanya, one is able to approach Radha and Krishna. And then in the home, then we're worshipping Krishna, we should be worshipping Lord Chaitanya. Then, it's expansion of that. But there's still a specialness to the Dham. It's expanded there, but the appreciation and the potency, generally we'll see, will be special in the original place. The intensity Bhajan is very great, the emotions, and we find the similar experience. But it has to do a lot with our endeavor. But it means if we are very Krishna conscious, we'll appreciate that. And if we're not, we won't. But in Mayapur and Vrindavan, even if we're not, the same potency is there. Just we don't notice it. But it's there. And the other, it will manifest according to your endeavor. Does that make sense?
Yes. It seems like when you're in the airport and there are those walkways that move you along, it's like when you're at home, you have to walk yourself, you have to endeavor to move. And when you're in the airport, somebody's moving you along, you may not notice it's moving you along. You're still walking, it's moving you a lot faster. Do you think this analogy applies to something?
And even if you don't walk, you're still moving. Yeah. Jaishishira ka gopina, holy kaare, gopal ji ki, jaraya.
What about the presence of the devotees, like maybe you're outside of Mayapur, might be in Bombay, but the devotees that are around you are so merciful, that they're helping you. Could you say in some way that they bring the Dham by their presence and their potency?
Yes, the devotees bring, but still the association with devotees, that's still seen as its own item. Its glory does not have to be established on the fact that it's a Dham. The devotees themselves are glorious. Because the devotees are always hearing and chanting about Krishna, so in that way then that becomes the spiritual realm. So the association of devotees is glorious because you always have the spiritual realm. The spiritual realm is special because Krishna is there. Like that. So the devotees then are able to manifest. So that becomes the actual central point where you take up devotional service because of the devotees. And we are able to progress because of the association of devotees. So the devotees, you know, are, I'm sorry, in that way also very special. Means each of the items contains the other. Hearing and chanting, it's also Krishna. It's also the Dham. It's all, everything is there. But it still, it has its way of interaction. In service to the holy name, you do by chanting. Service to the Dham, you do by sweeping or beautifying or something like this. You don't sweep the holy name. You chant the holy name. Or devotees in the association of devotees, you don't sweep the devotees. No, you serve the devotees. So each has its uniqueness, how it manifests. But actually, it's all the same because it's all Krishna. Right? So Krishna means Him, His name, His form, His qualities, His pastimes, everything is there. Yes. Anyone else has any questions? Yes. That's all the way in the back. Will you go that way? The process is how much one can do one endeavors for. Because the, how do you say, one has to choose a lifestyle, you know, that's suitable for their position. That if there's less material needs or less material diet, then one doesn't have to endeavor so much. The needs that one has as a family or, you know, some other obligations or other needs, then one has to be able to create, you know, the economic environment in which one can live. So naturally, it's not going to be on the same standard as the other aspects. It means you're hearing and chanting, these are direct. than engaging one's conditioned nature in Krishna's service, then it's a little less direct, but necessary. We have a conditioned nature, and this conditioned nature, then we have to deal with it. Right? We have to eat, we have to rest, we don't need so many things, so it must be addressed. So then the how to do this, how to take care. Now if we just take care according to our own ideas, then we may find it's not so satisfying. Though we may accomplish something, we may get what we start out to do, what we endeavor for. But the difficulty may arise that we find we're not satisfied. Because the problem is in the material world, there is no satisfaction. You know, there is no historical account of anybody really being satisfied. Right? We may be temporarily satisfied with something. But still there are problems. Right? There's still difficulties. Right? Even someone says, no, I'm very satisfied with my life. But there will be many things that they will figure, you know, if this was there, it would be nice, or that would be nice. You know, so many different things. So actual satisfaction is not attainable on the material platform. There are no solutions to material problems, right? There's not going to be actual material satisfaction. It means if there was, then this room here would be empty. Right? But this room is full of people because people are not satisfied materially. Right? We've done our duties, we've read the ads in the magazines or the billboards, we've bought the products, we've lived the lifestyle, we've, you know, done whatever we are told we should do. If we smoke this cigarette, then everything will be wonderful. There'll be tons of, you know, very wealthy, prosperous, you know, high-class people and tons of women and men, and everything will be there because we smoke this cigarette. Or if we dress in these particular pants, then, you know, people will be, you know, just crawling out of the woodwork to be with us. And, you know, all these things that they tell us, you know, what will happen. Right? And we do it and we find that none of it happens. Right? The only reason it happened in the advertisement is because they spent probably a whole day arranging that picture. Right? And they didn't take one picture, they probably took hundreds of pictures. And out of that hundreds, then they picked one that looked nice. And then that goes on the billboard, and then we think, because we're looking for happiness, then we think, you know, oh, here's a person who's happy. This person looks confident, they look satisfied, they look happy. That's because they were paid, you know, who knows how much, 10,000, 50,000, 100,000 rupees for that picture. So naturally they're going to be a little satisfied. You know, it had nothing to do with the pants or the cigarette or the car or anything to do with it. They got paid something. So that's why they're looking very happy there. And if they don't look good, then nobody's going to pay them. So they have to look good, right? Just like I said, you know, he's talking about the hoop tape. Where's the money? Right? So therefore we see it doesn't work. So then just making up our own idea or following others' idea has not gotten anyone satisfaction anywhere, neither here nor anywhere in the world, neither at this time or any time past. So then it comes down to the point, well, why it's not giving us satisfaction. Because the living entity then is spirit soul, is eternal part and parcel of Krishna. So then the material world, which is not eternal, then will not give any satisfaction. Because the first principle of something being nice is it should last. Right? It should last. If it doesn't last, how will it make you happy? Like, let's say we go and we sit you down and we start feeding you some very wonderful food. You're very hungry and we give you first-class food. And halfway through the meal, we take everything away. Right? Then will you call it a good meal? No, because it didn't last. You can say, no, why? You can say it was a bad meal. You said it was so nice, and these were first-class preparations, and I liked them so much. So why you say it wasn't good? Because it didn't last. It didn't satisfy. So no matter how nice it was, you can't call it happiness, can't call it sadness, because it didn't last, it didn't make it. So nothing we see actually lasts. Whatever we get, it falls apart, it changes, it transforms. So nothing lasts. So therefore, neither this body, nor others, our relatives, or family, or our money, or our possessions, nothing lasts. So therefore, we can't really find the answer. So then, the difficulty comes, okay, so then who are we? And what is this material nature? Okay, so let us just look at it. Okay, so then, why is it this material nature? Doesn't it? So, I mean, how does it work? Right? Because you can't just decide, okay, enough of this, you know, we'll go somewhere else. No, you're stuck with it, right? You can't get out of it. We're here in the material world, and we'll be here in the material world. So then we have to find out, so what's the source of this? You know, who is the source of us? What is the source of this material world? Then we find out that, yes, this is, that there's someone else who's arranged all this, right? We didn't arrange it. You know, like it or not, someone else arranged it. Right? So then, if we accept that, then how does, so then someone makes something, creates something, there's a purpose to it, there's an idea. Right? You go into the kitchen, and then, I mean, how do you say, it's just like this, the child sees something nice on their plate to eat, but they don't understand all the effort that went into creating that. They just take it for granted. Oh, great, there's something nice to eat, and then they get up and run off. Right? But there was some intelligence was behind that, some endeavor was behind it, some purpose was there. There's no purpose, you don't get anything. You go into the kitchen with no purpose, you're not going to get anything special or wonderful. Right? You may get nothing, right? Because you go in the kitchen and just sit there. Or if you start taking this and that, put it together, who knows what you'll come up with. Right? You can't guarantee you'll come up with anything. So there's a purpose, then you get something. So if this material world is working so wonderfully, right? It means material nature works wonderfully. What man does with it, that's enough. If we're discussing nature alone, it works very wonderfully. Right, sun is coming up, and all the stars, and the way everything works, it works very nicely. Right? It means without man, it works very wonderfully. Right? You add man, then there's a problem. But otherwise, without man, the way God made it, it works nice. Right? So then, we can see is that means there must be a plan. There must be some intelligence behind it. That means there must be some purpose. So what is this purpose of this material world? So then, seeing that it's temporary and doesn't really give satisfaction, and we as living entities are eternal. So then we have to start saying, well then there must be some, you know, are we supposed to be here? Right? Then if we see what is the nature of the living entity, this nature, is the essential nature, is to serve. Right? That's the one nature you can't change. One must serve. One wants to get anything, one must serve. If one wants to maintain or cultivate a relationship, one must serve. So by service, you get something. Right? If you don't serve, you don't get anything. Right? It's the modern theory, of course. The modern theory is just what you want, just get it. But it doesn't work. Right? Because the modern theory is not for us to get what we want. It's for the business people to get what they want. Right? That's their theory. You know, you just go out, do what you want to do. Why worry for, why be restricted? Just go out and spend your money so that you buy our product and we'll become rich. Of course, they don't tell you that. They shouldn't tell you that. Otherwise, you won't buy their product. Right? But all these different things that you, these things they'll set you free, set your money free, they may not set you free, but your money gets free, that's for sure. And they're the expert, they catch it. That's all. You know, it's just the way it is. So, point is that then one has to serve. So then, if we're eternal, then we should be serving also on the eternal platform. This temporary nature we've seen does not make us satisfied. It's temporary. So therefore, it can't make us happy. So that means then we have to deal with something that is like us, it's eternal. So that brings us then to the Lord. God is eternal. He is the source of us. He's the source of material energy. So there must be something there. There must be some benefit in trying to then serve Him. Right? At least come into that kind of association. So when we take that up, then things start to make sense. Otherwise, this material world makes no sense. Right? It means people are working hard, but what do they get? They're promised they'll be happy. No one's becoming happy. Right? We expect things to last. Nothing lasts. So if you really look at it, how we want things to go, things actually never go. So there's something wrong here. So on its own, it doesn't make any sense. Then God didn't just make it just for us to waste our time here. That also wouldn't be a nice thing. Right? So there must be a purpose. So the purpose that is given is that the living entity is supposed to take up the natural service to God. But the living entity is in the world. It's not so behind God. It's a big purpose. But it's not religion. I do a religious activity. What should be the result? Right? There should be prosperity. There should be auspiciousness and prosperity. Right? Shuv and La. Right? Now why the Shuv? Because in the La stays. Right? I do an activity, I'll get a result. And that result should stay. It shouldn't go away. Right? So if it stays, then that's considered auspicious. Right? And if the environment is auspicious, then naturally that auspicious environment will attract more profit. More benefit. So then we see is that religion here isn't actually being used as for service. It's being used as business. Right? We're not actually serving God to please God. We're serving God to get some profit. So then, with this attitude, we see people are still not happy because the problem is the profit you get is material. And material things don't make us happy. We think they make us happy, but we find they don't. They made us happy when we got it. But after we have it, what's the happiness? Then it's the next thing we want to get. And someone thinks, if I get a lakh of rupees, I'll be happy. But we get the lakh, for that moment, we're very happy. But the next day, then he thinks, well, now I should have 10 lakhs. So then one's in anxiety. Then when he has 10, he wants 100. When he has 100, he wants 1,000. Like this. It goes on. Whatever line you take, that will make you happy, we find ones to be happy. So you see that this is what you're doing. There has to be the aspect of service. So when we take service to the Lord, that is the purpose of religion. Then we see, then we actually become purified. Because when you perform an activity, it creates also a reaction, a result, and the desire to do that activity again. Right? We do something, it produces the desire to do it again. Or the converse, we do something that wasn't nice, and we don't want to do it again. But it's connected with the activity. So when we do material activities, then we want to do more material activities. So now the idea is if we're eternal spirit souls, then we want to do spiritual activity, which is also spiritual, is eternal. So to do that, then there has to be a way to do that. How are we going to do that? Right? Because all we have is material things, material stuff. Our house is full of material things, our body's material. The bodies of our relatives is material, our money is material, everything is material. So now, here comes the point, is that since religion is given by God, then the whole idea is how to perform those activities that are pleasing to God. He He gives those directions. So then by that, that creates, that you've done it for God, creates the desire more to do things for God. So we see is by the process of taking what we have and engaging in the Lord's service, then we become elevated, we become advanced, or we prosper spiritually. Material is another thing, we're not discussing that. But spiritually then we advance. So that when we have these duties, to expect that we must do these duties because we have these material desires. And the fulfillment of those desires is by a process. Right? You want money, then there must be some kind of endeavor for that money. Either some business or some work or some way that must be gained. But if we're just doing it for ourselves, it becomes material. We're not purifying. If we do it because it is our duty, and we're doing it for the Lord's pleasure, then we become purified. Of course, it is not on the same level as like chanting Hare Krishna, but at least it's part of the process. And we may say, but you know, okay, I'm doing it as part of the process, and so it's part of my religious duty, so why am I not becoming happy? Because the point is nothing material is going to make you happy. The happiness is a higher element. Right? The happiness, like the man is sitting at work, or the woman sitting at work, and work is not necessarily nice. Right? There's not many people who sit there and they, oh, I love sitting behind this little desk all day and, you know, doing whatever nice, boring work I do every day. And it's wonderful, you know, having difficulties with this person and that person, and difficulties with the boss or difficulties with employees. Oh, I love it. It's so wonderful. No one likes it. But the purpose of it, the results of it, that now we have this economic development, therefore it can be used for our relationships with those who matter to us, to the family members, or to whatever we're trying to do, whatever is our opportunities. For then it becomes nice, right? The man is thinking, I'm doing this for the family, the wife is thinking, I'm doing this for the family. Then that is what is useful. So when we're doing it for the family, it's nice, it's pious, and it gives us a material result. And when we're doing it for God, right, then it gives a spiritual result. So one has to learn the science how to perform one's material duties for the pleasure of God. That means one has to do it how God wants it to be done, right? I can't do it how I like and say God must like it. No. God likes it done the way He likes it. So when we understand that, so therefore, like a family person must take care of the dependents. That's the duty. Right? And so when one does that, that's proper. That's pious. But when one understands that because I have these material desires, then, and they're not going away just by sitting down and chanting, what am I going to do with these desires? I can't get rid of them. So therefore, I use the desire, but to follow the process that the Lord gives for how to fulfill that desire. And then by that, then slowly, slowly one becomes purified. So then that brings into light the element on why then one is going to work. So the work itself, we may not be able to do direct devotional service by hearing and chanting and that. We may be able to do a little bit, you know, take a book and in a break read, or on the way to work maybe do some chanting, but it's not so dynamic. But it's still connected because it's service connected with our conditioned nature, if we do it properly. Right? It means that, as we mentioned, we're not getting it because this is what we're supposed to do. Right? Money is going to come anyway. You do an activity, you're going to get something. What you'll get, that's another thing. Right? But that must be done. So then, we see that also is part of our, as the devotional process, though more indirect. Then we see what time is left, and what are the you know, desires, what are the needs, what are the endeavors that must be performed. So depending upon how much responsibility and which ways we want to satisfy those desires, there may be more or less time needed to be spent, you know, in the home, for the home. Because that's also then part of the process. It means you have your economic development, but you also have the home environment. Right? It means, you know, this would be the duties of varna and the duties of ashram. Right? So then one has to see how much time is needed there. So if there's more family members, naturally more time. Less family members, less time. More material assets, more time must be spent. You know, a house doesn't maintain just by smiling at it. It needs work. You know, less smaller house needs less. Right? So, like that, one has to then see what are the material desires. So the balance is with the material desires. The chanting, reading, that we can do 24 hours. But the problem comes is we have material needs due to our conditioned nature. So we have to see how much of the time that's going to take up and see what's left. So it's all a matter, basically, of priorities. How we prioritize. If hearing and chanting is the most important, and studying, you know, like studying problems, then you don't have to give more time for that. But giving more for that means less time for the other things. So that naturally means there has to be less desire. Or we have to have, you know, we have to be, the results that we get from less activities has to be greater. Right? I mean, there's some people, very, very wealthy, they go to the office for 1-2 hours a day, that's all. And they make crores. Other people are, you know, working for, you know, 10-15 hours a day and they get rupees. Right? So depending upon our ability, we have to see, what is my economic ability? Right? And then, therefore, then match our lifestyle to that. If you can only make a few rupees, therefore you should only have a few rupee lifestyle. And if you can make crores, then okay, then you can spend more time doing other things. So we have to see, depending upon what your needs are. So if you need more materially, naturally it's going to take your time. And if you need less materially, naturally then you'll have more time for other things. So Srila Prabhupada recommends that ideally we don't spend more than 8 hours a day for our economic development. Like that. That's enough. Whatever comes in that much time, then we gear our lifestyle for that. Right? It means we can either decide, I want to live like this and endeavor for it, you know, even if it means running 2 jobs a day. Or by my endeavor, I make this much money, so therefore I have a house like this, eat like this, dress like this, that to fit within that budget. So if 8 hours goes in that, then you're going to need some time in the house to set, so we'll give you some time. So that means we have to see the whole picture in this way. That's why we're giving a very excellent answer, is that we try to focus the day, that we give time. Certain amount of time is for our chanting and reading. Certain amount of time is for our other family duties. And a certain amount of time is for our economic development. And then we try to balance that. So that we have to see. Each individual has to apply the process themselves and see what they come up with. Right? And what's worth it and what's not worth it. That's why in the Vedic system, that one is trained in these things, and then one has that, I say, one is trained, and one thinks about, one contemplates what one's getting into. In the Vedic civilization, when people get married, they know what they're getting into. They know what grihastha life means. They know the duties, the commitments, all these things. They know this. Then they have that facility, they have that interest, then they do it. They don't have the facility, or they don't have the interest, or both, they don't do it. Right? They don't have the facilities to get married, they don't get married. Just because they want, they don't. Right? Because the point is you have to take care of a family. It's not enough that you want a family, you have to take care of it. Right? Just nice feelings isn't good enough to take care. Right? wife and children, you can smile at them. That's nice, but if you can feed them and clothe them, it's a lot better. You know? So, therefore, one has to think, what am I getting myself into? Then it starts to make some sense. But problem is the modern means then this way people are controlled in their senses, they're controlled in their endeavors, they don't waste money. So if they live like this, then how are they going to make money? Right? They're not selling you something to eat. Right? They're not selling you like a pot you need to cook your rice in. They're selling you a cigarette which you don't need. They're selling you fashion clothes which you don't need. They're selling you, you know, food that you don't need. You can cook the same food at your house better for less. Right? So all this you don't need. But then they will make their money. Right? So the modern culture is based, you should not think. You should simply want. And that's enough to validate your expenditure. Right? That's enough to validate it. You want it, therefore, then you should endeavor to get it. Whatever you have, spend the money on it. Why worry about tomorrow? Right? Because if you starve tomorrow, it doesn't bother the businessman. Right? Besides that, he gives a little bit of charity for all these different, you know, people that have no homes or no money. You know? So he feels he's doing his best. So, therefore, in the Vedic civilization, one has to think, one has to contemplate, one has to see what is real. Emotion's not enough. That's the thing. Emotion and intelligence both have to be applied. So we have our needs, so that's there. Then we have to see that what are we able to gain. Right? And then on top of it, then we have to see what is the spiritual. What's the spiritual needs? What are our emotional needs? What are our sensual needs? Right? How we will get that? And what is our proportion? Which is more important for us? Right? You know, wherever it's more important, naturally our endeavor and our facilities are going to go there. So the individual they choose. So the Vedic recommends that you put the emphasis on the soul, needs of the soul, because if that's prime, that's primary. If that is done, the other ones will naturally be as good as they can be. Right? If someone is spiritually satisfied, then the material shortness of satisfaction will be able to be tolerated. But if the spiritual is not the main, then when there's material dissatisfaction, which there will be, it's by definition the nature of the material world, then there'll be more anxiety and more endeavor to try to patch that up, to make something work. So that's I don't know, does that get anywhere? Or? Okay. Yes. We need a. Where's that microphone? Is it coming back?
Certainly, that hopefully becomes like a
material world is a temporary place, but how do we know that once you go back to the spiritual world, you will never get the desire to enjoy the fullness of God, it will never arise.
Mm-hmm. How many times will you stick your finger in the fire? Knowingly, how many times will you do it? No, the little child doesn't. Little child doesn't know what is fire. So it puts its finger in the fire. Will the child ever do it again? No. Not knowingly, maybe by accident. But knowingly, they'll never put their finger in the fire again. Because they don't. If someone doesn't know what is the material world, then they may come here. But once they know, they'll never come back. Right? We may think it's not a bad place, but, you know, if it's not a bad place, why are we sitting here? Because we want to know how we get out of here. That's what we're looking for, these answers. Okay? So you don't have to worry. Once going there, one doesn't come back, because one knows what the material world is, and there's nothing here to actually make us happy. Well, because no one else here is asking any questions. No, that's why I asked you what's the next program. Okay, so then you'll start the group on. So, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivinoda ki, time as I go, thank you.